Welcome to episode 320 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard, and with me tonight to discuss the latest news from the Microsoft entertainment technology space is the DMZ's very own Chris Barnes and host and producer of the End User podcast. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, Josh. It's great to be back, and we'll have a good show tonight, I think.
It's been a while since you've been on the show. You used to be on all the time when Richard was gone, but you've been busy lately.
Yeah, I'd have to go back to my list. I have a list somewhere of all of the shows that I've been on. But yeah, I was on a tear there for a while, and I think I must have done four or five shows relatively close to one another. But yeah, it's been a while. It's been since episode 276.
276?
Ear Force One, yes.
Oh my gosh, that's way longer than I expected.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So yeah, you're right. It's longer than I thought so too. So anyway, good to be back.
All right. Well, we've got a fair amount of news to cover tonight, so we're going to get right into this. And as usual, we're going to start with some listener feedback. Just one this week, but this one is from Bryce. And this one's somewhat unusual in the fact that he sent us a tremendous amount of detail about the problem that he's having. And the other nice and unusual aspect of this email is that we've been able to send multiple emails back and forth to try and work through this issue before even getting to the show. So here's what's going on. Bryce has a rather beefy Windows 7 Media Center box where he does all of his over-the-air recording. And then after they're recorded, he moves those shows automatically over to a Home Server 2011 box, which is also rather beefy, and he's running a RAID 5 array and all this stuff. He's got a really nice setup. But recently, he upgraded from an SLI configuration for his graphics cards to one beefy graphics card. Went from NVIDIA to NVIDIA, so it's still the same type of card and stuff. But whereas he used to get occasional audio and video stuttering, now he gets tons of audio and video stuttering when trying to play back his recorded shows from the home server through his media center. He's done a bunch of testing. He's tested this on other machines. It always plays fine on other machines. He tried using VLC and it stuttered a little bit less, but still a lot. And then I asked him what seems like the most obvious question that I wish I would have asked him in reply to his very first email, which is, what if he just plays the file locally instead of copying it off to the home server? And sure enough, if he plays the file locally, it doesn't stutter at all. So this is definitely a networking issue, but it doesn't seem like it would be the switch or anything on the server side because it plays fine on all of his other computers. So he actually just ordered another NIC because it looks like he was just using the onboard NIC from his EVGA 132-CK-NF79 motherboard. I don't know anything about this motherboard. I'm going to guess, just because it's onboard NIC, that it's Realtek based, and those are pretty much always garbage.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess. And anytime you get the embedded NIC, it's likely to be Realtek, and they're always garbage, yes.
Right. So what I'm hoping is that he bought what I'm really hoping is that he bought an Intel-based NIC, because Intel makes really, really good NICs. They're a little bit pricier, but by pricier, I mean like $30 as opposed to $10 or, you know, some of these other PCI NICs that you can buy. So he got that today, hasn't had a chance to install it yet, but it sure as heck to me seems like this is just going to be a networking issue on his PC. And I guess the good thing is that he's probably not going to have to wipe out his whole computer. He was afraid that, you know, he might have to go the nuclear option and just reinstall Windows, which you never want to do on a Windows Media Center machine, because then you lose all your recording schedules and all that.
Yeah, the problem is that it usually fixes it, right?
Right. Like,
well, if you just, you know, explode the entire machine, then things somehow work on the other end. What's worse is when they don't work on the other end, and you've actually broken something by doing that.
Right.
So I wonder, Josh, if, and maybe you covered this in your email back and forth, so he's playing files off of the home server. I wonder if he played files on the home server, if that would stutter still or not.
Like actually watch the video on the home server PC?
Yeah, just for funsies, you know, like not like you would actually do that in any real way, but
right.
Just to make sure that playback on that actual machine from which it's being served up would do anything.
I don't believe he tried that, but I don't think it's the home server, considering that it works. He tried this on at least two other machines, and it played back fine over the network from the home server to multiple other machines.
That takes out that aspect of it. So, yeah.
So,
that's
yeah,
a tough
hopefully,
one.
Hopefully it's just going to be the NIC. Hopefully he got a nice NIC. Hopefully he didn't buy one that's also got a Realtek chip on there and has the same set of issues. So, we'll keep in contact with Bryce, and hopefully next week we'll have a happy ending to this story that doesn't involve blowing away Windows and starting over.
No, don't do that.
All right, so let's move on to the news. We're going to start with some Kodi news, and I really hate the name Kodi. I think most people probably get annoyed by it. You know, one thing that I've noticed is that you never see an article about Kodi that doesn't also feel the need to preface, usually even in the title, that Kodi is the new name for XBMC, because no one can remember that Kodi is XBMC.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they wanted to rebrand things, because they really have nothing to do with Xbox anymore. So I understand why they wanted to rebrand to Kodi, but they've been around too long. They don't get to do that. You know, it's just the fact that XBMC has been around as long as they have been, they're at critical mass. You can't go backwards now.
Right. Well, so that's not really the news here, obviously. The news is that there's a new add-on for Kodi that's coming out soon. It's not out yet, but it is a new add-on from HD Home Run or from Silicon Dust, the company that makes the HD Home Run tuners. And it's an add-on that allows you to use an HD Home Run tuner, whether it's over the air or cable card, and watch live TV right from within Kodi. I almost called it XBMC again. Now, you've been able to do this before using DLNA, but it's been a pretty miserable experience because you basically just got a list of channels. And you would select the channel, not knowing what was on. You would just select a channel by its call sign, and then it would tune the stream. Well, now with this new add-on that they've made, you actually get a little bit of an electronic program guide. Now, even that looks a little different than what we're used to seeing. Instead, with this new plugin, it gives you a guide that just is displayed on the right side of the screen. You know, it's maybe a fifth of the screen width, and it shows what's currently on every channel as you scroll through. Now, we're used to a guide showing us, you know, maybe the next hour and a half of what's on TV. This basically shows you what's on now. It gives you a little description and some images and stuff, and it'll show you what's coming up next, but it's not, you know, a big full screen guide. It's just on the side, which certainly has its benefits, but it's definitely unusual.
Yeah, it's definitely a new way to do the guide. I don't think I've ever seen anything on any platform I've ever seen that was quite like that. But it's really good to see. You know, I went back at some point, this was maybe a year ago at this point, and I used their program called Server WMC to use Media Center within XBMC at the time and Kodi now. And, you know, honestly, it didn't work very well. So I'm glad to see someone else kind of take a stab at this. Now, it has been a long time, and it was like warning, do not use this public beta kind of thing when I used it. So that's kind of my fault. But I'd like to go back and look at that at some point. But having this be an option for consuming some of the media that's on your network is definitely a good thing to have.
Yeah. And it being based on these HD home run tuners makes total sense with the way that people typically set up a Kodi environment. You have one central server and then lots of, you know, sort of like extenders out at all of your TVs, just pulling everything across the network. So network-based TV tuners make total sense in this situation. And because it's doing so much of the work either on the tuner or on the server, it works on like everything. It even works on a Raspberry Pi, which is pretty impressive.
Nice. Yeah.
So I mean, you can just stick a $35 Raspberry Pi at your TV and be running live TV and all of your movies and all that stuff through Kodi. So that's cool. We don't know a whole lot of details. There's basically one video that announced this news with more details to come soon. We'll, of course, have a link to this in the show notes. The video did say over the air and showed the cable card tuner. So I'm presuming that if you're using the cable card tuner, but most of your channels are copy protected, that it's still not going to work because it's not like Kodi has created, you know, gotten a DRM license to support copy protected content. And I doubt that this add-in would have that either. So you're probably still out of luck if you're stuck on a cable provider that copy protects everything or even just a lot of things like I am. So, but it looks cool. And the only other thing that they didn't mention is recording. This might only be for live TV.
Yeah, and that's not quite ideal, right? I mean, ideally, if you're going to have TV video be on the platform, you really want to take it to the house. You know, you want to be able to record stuff. You want to be able to watch stuff live. You want to be able to watch it later. You want to be able to watch it elsewhere. But, you know, I don't look at this as that kind of thing, maybe. This is almost like a first stab at what could be the future of this kind of plugin for Kodi. I really, you know, I don't feel like they're really aiming this to be that, you know, thick and complete a solution as we coming from Media Center would probably want it to be.
Although, how many people with HD home run tuners are using them with Media Center? You know, probably most of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a rather interesting add-on. I'm very curious to see what they're going to do with it when it comes out. We don't even know when it's coming out, but once it does, we'll let you know all the details.
Yeah, we know when it's coming out. It says here in the show notes, soon. That's a date. Right?
Okay. Yeah, maybe not. So one thing that we do have some dates on is Sling TV. Now, we've known about Sling TV well since CES when it was announced, and Sling TV being it's supposed to be the cord cutter's dream, right? Right, Chris? It gives you access to popular cable networks like CNN and AMC and Disney and ESPN and you know, lots of big name channels available completely streaming over your internet provider. You don't need a cable subscription. You just pay Sling TV $20 a month. And this has been available as a web app to watch in your browser and on the Roku since early February, February 8th, February 9th timeframe. But now, this week, you can now get it on your Xbox One. And Chris, you put this in the notes. I didn't really realize this, but this is the first game console to get Sling TV access.
Yeah, so it's a little weird. They're calling it, this was my reaction when I first saw this story pop up, is Sling TV launches today exclusively on the Xbox One. And I thought, well, it's generally available. Anyone can go get it. It's on Roku. It's like, it's all over the place. But yeah, what they meant was it's the first gaming console, which, as we know, particularly for Richard, not so much for you, is kind of their Trojan horse media play, and it's nice to see it on a console that's widely available, or a lot of people across the United States as well as elsewhere have this this console just sitting there waiting to be used for media as well as games. And it's nice to see that it's there for Sling TV as well.
The other thing that's really nice is that as an Xbox One owner, instead of just getting the typical 7-day trial to give this service a try, you get a whole month for free if you're using it on the Xbox One. And if you don't have an Xbox One yet, if you go out and pick one up, you get a 3-month trial to Sling TV. So, you know, I haven't tried Sling TV yet. I've kind of been waiting for the Xbox One app. And heck, now I get to try it for a whole month. So I'm going to do that over the next week and see how well this works. You know, Sling TV is, it sounds like a cool service, but, you know, I was talking with my wife about it yesterday and, you know, asked her if we were to cut cable and stuff, what would you think of just using this? And she said, well, can I record things? And I said, well, you know, that's kind of the tricky thing here is that it depends on the channel. It depends on the show. Some of it's available sort of like VOD, but sometimes there's restrictions on when it's available and for how long. So, you know, these are the types of things that I want to check out. But Sling TV, you know, if you, especially if you're not already like tied to something like Media Center, where you're used to being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, and keep content for as long as you want, then, you know, I think it's still a pretty interesting service, even though, Chris, I know that you're kind of down on the Sling TV idea. You don't think it makes as much sense for the cord cutter community,
yeah, well,
right?
It depends on the situation. So there's two classes of people that they're after with the service, right? And one of them is so-called cord cutters, and one of them is so-called cable nevers, is, I guess, I've seen all kinds of terms for that class of people, people who've never had cable. And I think that for a lot of people, and it totally makes sense for cord cutters. I totally admit that. But for the people who have never had cable, I feel like, and I've talked with some friends, because this includes me and actually most of my friends, are of the cable never, I don't know, it's not a movement, what do you call it, group, of the group. And, you know, I think what a lot of cable nevers are thinking about is not necessarily even price sensitivity to the content they're watching, but they have apathy toward a lot of the content that's out there. So for example, you brought up CNN. A lot of people I know would just say, okay, it's literally not valuable to me. You know, like, it's not content that's interesting. Now, there's a bunch of content that's wrapped up in services that are on cable that you can get through Sling TV that are interesting. But I guess the question is getting the whole package for the price that they, what is it, $20 a month? Is that right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay. It starts at $20 a month.
Right, and there's add-on packs and stuff like that, but it starts at 20, right. Okay, so for $20, you know, in that base kind of streaming package, you know, is there content that the cable nevers won't be apathetic to? And that's a harder question to answer than, well, okay, now you get cable channels over the internet.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think obviously the big things that people tend to point out with Sling TV is, well, you can watch The Walking Dead as it's on TV and Better Call Saul and, you know, things like that. And if you've got kids, then having Disney makes a lot of sense. But for me, the fact that for some of this content, you have to still watch it live is just, it's kind of a non-starter for me. I mean, that works for CNN. You know, if I'm going to watch CNN, I'm going to watch CNN live. It's kind of the point. But I never watch The Walking Dead live. Like, I just don't do that. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting. But at the very least, it's nice to see this coming to the Xbox One. It's
Perfect
place for this type of service to be offered and to get these nice extended trials is an even better situation to be in.
Yeah, that's for certain. And I'd imagine we'll see, you know, the Xbox be the first video game console that has it. But I would have to imagine that in the coming, I don't know, 6 months or so, we'll see integration into some of the other platforms as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the PlayStation 4 will get it eventually.
And can't be too far behind.
Nope. All right, well, another platform that is pretty common for watching video on your TV is the Chromecast. And Chris, I'm sure you have a Chromecast, right?
I do. I got one actually relatively recently. So since the last time I was on the show, I have acquired a Chromecast.
All right. See, I never bought one because it was just never all that interesting to me, despite the low cost. But, you know, one of the things that always kind of bugged me about the way the Chromecast worked was you had to use your phone or your tablet to control the thing. You know, like it makes sense that you start the process from your phone or your tablet or maybe your Chromebook or something where you pick your video and then send it to the Chromecast to watch on your TV. But if you get a phone call or you need a beverage or you need to go to the restroom or, you know, just any reason to pause the show, you got to pull out your phone and maybe you've got to unlock it and put in your PIN. And that's a lot of extra crap that you have to do just to pause a video. Well, they've finally, mostly fixed this situation through HDMI CEC, which is a technology that we talk about somewhat often on the show. It's the control mechanism built into HDMI that sends control codes just right through HDMI to your TV or back and forth. And HDMI CEC isn't new to Chromecast. It's been there from the beginning. It's what enables the Chromecast to automatically switch the input on your TV for you when you send content to the Chromecast. But now they've implemented the ability to use the play and pause buttons on your TV's remote control and then send those via HDMI CEC to the Chromecast so that now you can finally pause your content with a real remote control instead of pulling out your phone.
It's definitely a nice addition, but at least for the way I have everything set up, for me, it's kind of useless. So I'd imagine this is a little more common with this podcast listenership than just out there in the wild. Because, you know, most people just use TV speakers and they're done with it. You know, they don't have any other media requirements or whatever. But for people who listen to this, you know, we're talking about people with receivers and surround sound systems and stuff like that. And that's the situation I'm in. So it's never been able to switch the inputs for me because, you know, it's plugged into the back of my receiver, which is then plugged into the back of my TV. So if it were to do something like that, I don't think it would quite get the job done. So I've always just had to tune to those inputs. Now, what I do have is a Harmony remote, so I at least have a scene on my Harmony remote that is the Chromecast. So whenever I want to do that, I hit the button and it goes over there and switches all the inputs to what it needs to be. But so at least for me and my kind of more complicated setup, this play and pause just pretty much won't work with everything that I've done to kind of automate all of the happenings in my home theater. So I'm glad to see it get it, but I am disappointed that just because of kind of the architecture of how it works, it still is kind of not useful for me to be able to pause it. And you're right. So when I need to pause something, I need to open my phone, unlock it, put in the PIN, switch the app, if I've switched away from the app already, and go back to Netflix or whatever and hit pause. And that is exactly what you have to do to pause it. So,
right.
Unfortunately for me and a lot of people out there, it's still not going to be the case. But it is nice that probably a lot more people out there who have simpler setups will be able to do something like this. If they know about HDMI CEC, which if you walk up to someone on the street and you say, well, you know, HDMI CEC, I'm not sure you would get anything but a blank stare.
Right. What are these seven letters that you're spitting out
yeah,
at me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and the other problem is that it isn't universal. It doesn't work for everything. It works for a lot of things. But for example, Roku doesn't support it for some reason. I don't really understand why, but that's still the case for the time being. I assume that eventually it will support that, and most of the common sources will support it, but it's still an unfortunate problem.
It to me, it was like the dream that never was. There's a bunch of devices that don't support it, and it sounds great, and you know, you go look at it, and like each manufacturer has their own little flavor of it, and it just kind of there's got to be people out there that have used it with great success, but I've never found it to be interoperable enough with all of the components that it was terribly useful. And again, I don't know, maybe my setup's too complicated. Maybe that's my fault.
It doesn't sound that complicated to me. But. All right, so let's move on. We've got a weird story here. So, Chris, I know you're not a big-time gamer, but have you ever heard of the game Dead Rising?
Yeah, I remember seeing it around. Wasn't that some kind of like zombie cowboy thing? What was it?
I'm not sure about the cowboys, but definitely the zombies.
Okay.
So this is Dead Rising is a game made by Capcom that's always been on Xbox. So it's an Xbox game, and they've made a movie out of it. So this is an Xbox game that is now a movie that's produced by Sony, which is weird in and of itself. And then this video, or this movie, instead of like coming out to theaters and all that, which it might be, but probably only on a limited release, is then going to be available online via Crackle, which is Sony's video streaming service. Now, it's coming out on Crackle everywhere on March 27th, but it's based on an Xbox game, so it's coming out first via Crackle on Xbox consoles. It doesn't get weirder than this to me. So if you're interested in this movie, it's called Dead Rising Watchtower, and you're probably an Xbox person if you're interested in this, because it's only ever been an Xbox game. You can watch it first on your Xbox 360 or Xbox One via Sony's Crackle app on March 20th on your Xbox consoles. And I don't really get it, but...
Is there any word when it's coming to, you know, Sony's console?
It's only a one-week exclusivity on Xbox. After that, it'll be on anything that has a Crackle app, which I'm assuming PlayStation has a Crackle app. I don't know why it wouldn't.
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I feel like given Sony's kind of fragmentation as a company, you know, the left hand sometimes doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
That's a good point.
But you're probably right. So I was thinking of Red Dead Redemption as the cowboy bit, and I had mixed it up with Dead Rising. So my bad. Sorry about that.
I could see that. Red Dead Zombie Rising Redemption.
Yeah, cowboy zombie apocalypse game. I like it. Let's make it.
Yeah. I'm a little bit tired of the zombie games, but that might be a spin that we haven't seen yet. I like the idea. All right, cool. Well, let's move on to another app here for Xbox One users. And this is brand new today. Not a ton of news or details about this yet, but there's now an AT&T UVerse app for the Xbox One. Really, really light on details, but just based on the screenshots, which is really all I have to go off of because I'm not a UVerse subscriber, so installing this app wouldn't be all that beneficial to me. But it looks like this UVerse app essentially gives you everything that a UVerse set-top box would. It definitely has live TV access, but also has movies, and it even showed access to premium movie channels like HBO and Epix and things like that. So it seems to me like it's, you know, everything that would be live TV via a UVerse set-top box can also be accessed through this free app on your Xbox One. And that's really cool news if you're a UVerse subscriber. The thing that jumped out at me when I first saw this was, you know, we've got, you know, I'm friends with a couple of UVerse subscribers, and one of them in particular was really excited when UVerse came to town because, you know, he had Xbox 360s all over his house. And back then you could use an Xbox 360 as a UVerse set-top box. Yeah, so he did that.
Media Room, was that? It was somehow involving their IP streaming TV over IP thing, but I forget how exactly all that fit together.
Yeah, I think it was the original version of Media Room, Media Room 1.0.
Right.
And it may still be using that, but I'm not entirely sure. And then I want to say a year and a half ago, AT&T just decided not to support the Xbox 360 anymore, and they pulled the UVerse app from the Xbox 360 with no other real solution. You know, I mean, other than using their set-top boxes, obviously, which you have to pay a subscription fee per box every single month. And I don't think you had to if you were using an Xbox 360. And,
yeah, good point.
You know, again, no details here, but I would bet that you don't have to pay a subscription fee to use this app on the Xbox One either. So I'm going to try to talk to one of my friends who does have an Xbox One and UVerse to see how well this works and what all it gives them access to. But it looks like a great solution. You know, the Xbox One, much like the 360 before it, is really turning into the console for all of your media stuff. We've got Time Warner Cable, we've got Sling TV, you know, now we've got AT&T UVerse. You know, lots of different options there for watching all of your content right on your Xbox One.
I'm still jealous of the European over-the-air adapter or whatever that they sell now.
Yeah, we barely make it a show without talking about how jealous we are of the Europeans and the Australians now.
Oh,
who
yes.
Have access to that over-the-air tuner right on the Xbox One. All right, so earlier we were talking about how XBMC renamed themselves to Kodi, and we didn't really like that name, but we've got news from the media browser team that they're also renaming themselves because they didn't really feel that media browser adequately describes what their service is and that it might be too legacy of a name, that it might detract from what media browser can now do. So they're renaming themselves also. And I believe you pronounce this MBY. It's spelled EMBY. What do you think of the new name for media browser?
Yeah, that would be my guess is MBY. That's how I would say it off the top of my head. But they need like a, you know, click here to pronounce MBY. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a name. It's a name that's like unique. I'm going to mix it up here. It's copyrightable, right? It's brandable. It's something that's not just two English words mashed together. So I can see something about that being good for them. And, you know, they in the blog post that they shared this, they say, well, you know, what's Google and Skype? That's also kind of ridiculous. So maybe people will get used to it. But what I'd really like to see, and I'm being facetious here, fair warning, is MBY be a verb. Like, I'm going to MBY the Watching Dead.
The Walking Dead?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Sorry. I'm going to MBY the Walking Dead.
You're going to MBY some zombie cowboy action?
Yes.
So, do you like the new name more than Kodi? Are we going to have the same problem where every single news article about MBY for the next year also has to include the words media browser to remind people what it is?
Probably. The one thing that I think, now, media browser, I feel like, has a smaller community. They may not. Like, they've actually grown a lot. Their product offerings have just exploded since they used to, you know, be in Media Center and all of that. But I feel like just kind of your average geek that's floating around the tech sphere in some way is less likely to have heard of media browser than they are of XBMC. And maybe it's just because XBMC is older that I have that impression. So I'd imagine that they'd have an easier time changing their name than XBMC would. But again, I'm not sure if that's just kind of based upon XBMC's age in the industry or not.
No, I do think this makes sense because, you know, media browser, like you alluded to earlier, it's just two words kind of jammed together. Yeah. it's really hard to search for on the internet, and like this is going to be way easier to Google, that's for sure. And they don't, I agree with you, I don't think they have quite as much, I don't think as many people know them as did XBMC. So rebranding it gets them back out into the news again. It's an easier name to remember because it's not just two arbitrary words smashed together. I like this. You know, it's not stupid. Like I just don't like the name Cody. It sounds like something you would name your dog, not some software. So I think this will actually be good for the media browser team.
Yeah.
Whereas with XBMC, yeah, you can say it's not about Xbox anymore, but then you just say the XBMC, it doesn't mean anything, and that's okay. So I like this move by the media browser team. And you're right. This is, while they're not nearly as well known as XBMC or Plex or any of these others, they are out there on almost as many platforms as their competitors.
Yeah.
So I think this is good news for MB, and hopefully it's just another step in the right direction for those guys.
So Josh, what was this reminds me of, what was that like kitchen top counter tablet thing that I can't think of the name of what it was? It may have been from Sony. What am I thinking of?
Yeah, I remember the Sony. It was Sony. But I don't remember. It had some stupid name too.
It was quite similar, and I don't know. I can't think of what that device was actually called. But the name strikes a similarity in my brain, even if I can't remember what the name of that thing was.
Well, maybe someone in the chat room will remember the name of that weird little Sony tablet. But so, yeah, I could see that.
So does that make Cody a man's best friend?
Oh boy, let's just move on. Let's move on to some gaming news. Not a lot of gaming news here, but an interesting little promotion from Xbox. There's been this thing called the Xbox One Family Fun Pack, which you can't get much more lame for a name than the Family Fun Pack. But this thing's been around for a while. I didn't know about it. And What it is a few games. It includes Risk, Monopoly, and Trivial Pursuit, and 3 months of Xbox Live Gold. And that's $60, which isn't bad. You know, those, I mean, that might sound a little bit pricey, but that's only because those games are kind of pricey. I mean, I think those games on their own are $20 each. So you can kind of look at this as getting the Xbox Live Gold for free.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I mean, it's always, honestly, it's always kind of upset me that Xbox Live Gold actually costs money to use, honestly. But particularly for, remember, you used to have to use it, this isn't still the case, excuse me, since I'm not an Xbox person or a PS4 person, I'm just not a gamer person, like, I'm filling Richard's old man shoes, aren't I? you don't have to use it for Netflix anymore. That's right.
That's correct. Yeah,
right. you used to have
Xbox Live Gold for everything.
Yeah.
Netflix and all the extras. But yeah, now you don't need it for anything except for online gaming.
Right. So that's a little better. But it's always kind of bugged me that all of that, particularly when it was with the media features. But it always kind of bugged me that Xbox Live cost anything at all. But yeah, it does in reality, you know, back here on Earth, and it seems like a pretty good deal. If you are one that would get these games in the first place, then you might as well get some Xbox Live Gold service in there too.
Right. So the cool thing here, and the news behind this, is that they're doing a promotion now where instead of getting 3 games and 3 months of Xbox Live Gold for $60. They're throwing in 2 more games, and they're decent games. You now also get Zoo Tycoon and Max Curse of the Brotherhood. So, you know, now you get 5 games and Xbox Live Gold. You know, if you had to pay for all of that stuff individually, it'd be like $120 or something like that. So, actually $130. So you know, if you're interested in these games and, well, regardless of whether or not you have an Xbox Live Gold subscription, because even if you already have one, it'll just extend it by another 3 months, then this might be an interesting promotion for you to jump in on. And it's all just digital codes. You can just go on over to Amazon, get this, and you'll get all of the codes emailed to you, and you can just download all the games. So pretty cool. And then one other quick gaming topic. This was actually news from a couple weeks ago, but it's more relevant as we're much closer to its release now. And this is totally for me, Chris. this is tailor-made for me. This is, there's a new standalone expansion for Forza Horizon 2 coming out. Standalone meaning you don't even have to have Forza Horizon 2. You can just get this expansion, and it's for the new Fast and the Furious movie. It's Forza Horizon 2 presents Fast and the Furious. So it's Fast and Furious, you know, cars from the movie. It's the actual cars from the movie that's coming out in April. That movie comes out April 3rd. I'll be there the night it comes out. and you get to play them in Forza Horizon, basically. And like I said, you don't need Forza Horizon. So it's not like you have to go out and pay $60 for Forza Horizon. And what's even cooler is that if you get it within the first 2 weeks of it becoming available on March 27th, you get it for free. You don't have to pay anything for it. If you're not punctual, though, you are going to have to pay. After that two-week period, you are going to have to check out $10. It's only $10 if you miss out on that first 2 weeks. And just to be clear, it's not get it for free and then after 2 weeks have to pay $10. If you got it during that 2 weeks, you can play it forever for free. It's just if you don't get it within that first 2 weeks, then you'll have to pay $10 after that. So I'm pretty excited about this, as you might imagine. And
sure.
It's only, that's next Friday. So I'm really looking forward to that.
All right. Well, you'll have to give us a review when that time comes around on the podcast.
I have a feeling I could probably already tell you how I'm going to feel. So that's cool and exciting news. This next story, not so cool or exciting. And that's that Vivo, which I think most people are probably familiar with Vivo. If you've ever gone to YouTube and done a YouTube search for a music video, you've probably ended up on a Vivo video. Vivo is the place to watch music videos. And they have their own apps on everything, including Windows Phone, except for not so much anymore because they're retiring their Windows Phone app. So here's their official quote. The Vivo app for Windows Phone has been permanently retired. However, there are two ways that you can continue enjoying Vivo content on your Windows Phone. Number one, use the mobile web version of Vivo.com on your phone's browser. Or two, use YouTube's app to view Vivo videos. The app will still be available on Windows 8.1 for tablets and PCs. Thanks for using Vivo. No, thank you, Vivo, for ditching our beloved platform. I don't really understand moves like this. You know, unless they were planning some huge overhaul of all of their apps and just didn't want to do it for Windows Phone. Okay, then just don't update it for Windows Phone. As long as the app's still going to work, let us have our app, for crying out loud.
That's a fair point, or at least, you know, wait until, you know, you change something about Vivo so that it wouldn't work to pull it and say, oh, sorry, we had to, you know, we had to pull this because it's not going to work with some change we've made to the back end or something like that. So that is kind of disappointing that they are just pulling a perfectly good app out of the store, because I'd have to imagine that they didn't have to, you know, write anything particularly special for the platform. You know, I'd have to imagine they have existing infrastructure that serves out other stuff that the Windows Phone is just kind of suckling on, right?
You would think, yeah.
But so it's not like it's costing them a lot to keep around, so it is kind of disappointing to see that go. But ultimately, they're right. You know, most of Vivo's stuff is just on YouTube, so I honestly don't see it as that much of a loss, but the idea that they would retire the app is kind of a shame.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem is really just the perception of another big name app leaving Windows Phone. Like, we've been trying for years to say, hey, we've got all of the apps that you care about. And then we've been struggling because, yes, we've got apps, but they lack features or they aren't updated. And now we're starting to see some of these apps leave. And this isn't the first big name one. We've seen, you know, Bank of America say that they're leaving, and Chase Bank is leaving. And so it's not a good time when all of these big name apps are now leaving the platform.
Yeah, it's one thing to not come to the platform in the first place. It's another to leave, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And at least we're at a point where, you know, there was a lot of back and forth over Google's YouTube app, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
So at least it's, you know, I could see a situation where they release this and they say, well, just use the YouTube app. And it's like, well, you know, there's no YouTube app.
Right.
So thanks. But that's not right. That's not the case anymore, thankfully. So
yeah, that would have been even worse. So this next story isn't quite as bad, although some Windows Phone users aren't happy about this one either. Well, remember that there was a service called Mix Radio that was actually created by Nokia, which of course was then bought by Microsoft. And then Microsoft fairly recently sold off Mix Radio because Microsoft didn't really have use for another music streaming service. Mix Radio is more like Pandora than it is like Spotify. You know, it's like radio stations instead of just pick all of the individual songs that you want to listen to right now. And it has some low subscription fee. It's been a while since I've looked at it. I want to say it was in the neighborhood of $3 or $4 a month for Mix Radio access. So Microsoft sold it, but the company that bought it said, we're still absolutely committed to the Microsoft platforms. We're going to keep making the app. We're not going to pull it like Vivo. They didn't actually say that. But this week they did announce that they're releasing beta apps for iOS and Android. I don't think this is bad news, you know, 'cause they again reaffirmed that they're not leaving Windows, but a lot of Windows Phone fans are just using this as another argument to say, see, everyone's leaving us, you know, what is Microsoft going to do to make this platform work for its fans. I think that this is not nearly as big of a problem as, say, Vivo leaving the platform, though.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you look at the platforms out there, and particularly if you're launching a beta app, I mean, iOS and Android are the market leaders, and you just have to realize that, and that's just what's going to happen. It's another thing entirely to say, okay, we're going to come out on the two biggest platforms and, you know, we're not going to support the third biggest platform. Okay, sounds reasonable. Maybe we'll get to it later. But it's another thing entirely to say, well, we supported the third party, the third biggest platform, and then we pulled it.
You know? Right.
So I don't know. It's just business. It makes sense. It's not exactly surprising, but it is nice to see them, you know, address it up front and say, well, okay, no, we're actually going to do that at some point, but it makes sense to target the larger platforms first, unfortunately.
All right, Chris, so we've spent the whole show talking about all the different content and different ways to watch content and stuff. What are you actually watching in your entertainment center?
Right, so I've got a couple things that I've been watching, which I've been quite impressed with. And the first and probably my favorite sci-fi of recent times is The 100. Have you heard of this one?
I'm not sure that I have.
So it's a CW show, and it's set far into the future after the Earth has become irradiated. So the people of Earth had gone up into a space station to live out their days, and madness ensues. So I don't want to give away any spoilers or anything, but that's the world they've created, is that you've got an irradiated Earth, and they're living in a space station, and some things happen. So it is definitely a CW show. If you're looking for Battlestar Galactica, this is not that. But I've been fairly impressed with it, and I've been watching it not live, but you know, like the next day on the DVR on the media center. So I've been fairly impressed with them.
And is this currently in their first season, or has this been around for a little while?
No, so they got renewed into their second season. I always get confused now that we have like in a given year, you actually have like two seasons, but it's one season, right. You know. So I don't know. That drives me crazy. But they are in their second season, and that is airing currently, I believe. So they've got a lot of very interesting plot lines going, and I've really been enjoying it.
Well, cool. I might have to check that out then. Yeah, you know, the CW is an interesting network that a lot of people either love or hate their shows. But Richard and I have both been fans of various shows that were on the CW. So I might have to check this out.
Yeah, I think this is a different beast, Josh. I think if you go watch this show, it's obviously a CW show. Like, there are some like teenage intrigue moments that happen. But they're few and far between, and the sci-fi world that they've created is just fantastical, and that's really cool to see, even if it is a show on the CW. So I think this is a show that transcends the network that it's on a little bit, but it definitely has some of those moments.
Okay,
and the second one that I've got is called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and this is a comedy that is a Netflix original that is written by Tina Fey. So it's got some notion of 30 Rock style humor running through it, and the whole thing begins when there are I believe it was three women who were underground, and they were being told that the nuclear apocalypse had happened outside and they weren't allowed to leave. And so the very beginning of the show, they're pulled out of the ground after having been there for like 20 or 30 years or something like that. And it's one of the girls' story in readjusting in society. So it's written really funnily. And if you like Tina Fey's style of humor, you really like this show. It's really funny. It's probably my favorite show that I've watched in my favorite comedy show that I've watched in some time now. So it's really good. Really highly recommended.
Cool. Well, not for me, because I don't watch comedies, but for everybody else out there. Cool.
So, and the last thing that has changed in my entertainment center since I've been on forever ago is that I've stopped using the Media Center Netflix app.
Why? Because of the search problem?
No. So the search didn't really bother me that much. Although, you know, it's nice. It would have been nicer if it had worked. But the thing for me was getting surround sound out of it. It's in stereo. And there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, that's true.
So what I've done is, since getting the Chromecast that we talked about a little bit earlier, the Chromecast actually does support 5.1 surround. I'm not sure about 7.1. It's Dolby Digital. And I'm not sure, you know, if Netflix does 7.1 and what shows they do them on. But anyway, nearly all of the shows that you would expect to support 5.1 that are modern do in fact come in 5.1 in Dolby Digital. So pretty much, if I want to watch Netflix now, I'm heading to the Chromecast and not Media Center anymore. So that's a little bit of a departure.
And so you still have to deal with the issues that we talked about earlier when you want to pause your content and stuff, but you find that to be worth it.
Yeah, I find the ability to get the surround sound out of it to be worth it for sure. But I cannot tell you how many times I've hit pause on my Harmony remote and been very disappointed.
And I just double checked. I think that Netflix only supports 5.1, not 7.1.
Okay, good.
the way that I tested this was to open up the Netflix Windows 8 app, and I just went to House of Cards, because if anything was going to support 7.1, it would probably be House of Cards.
Right.
And that says 5.1. So.
Right. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I think 5.1 is pretty good. I'm not going to complain about that. All right. Anything else in your entertainment center? Is that it for you this week?
No, I think that's about it for me. I'm looking forward to Orphan Black coming back, and I'll be watching that when it does. But that's kind of what I've been watching recently.
All right. Well, I am continuing on with the quest to watch all of these Marvel movies. And this last weekend, Jen and I watched Thor. This was of the movies that we agreed that we were going to watch, the one that I was least interested in watching. It just didn't seem like it was going to be interesting at all to me. I was somewhat pleasantly surprised. Now, don't misunderstand me in that I might actually think that this was an amazing movie. It wasn't. But it wasn't any worse than any of the other Marvel movies. I know there's a lot of big Iron Man fans out there, but and a lot of people think that those Iron Man movies are the best of these Marvel movies, but I think Thor was at least as good as the first Iron Man movie. It doesn't take much to say that it's better than the second Iron Man movie, but I thought it was at least as good as the first one. It didn't seem to have quite as much cheese going on as some of the really cheesy comedy moments of the Iron Man movies. And I don't know, it was okay. I really thought I was going to hate it, and I didn't at all. And I know that's not a lot of praise, but and someone in the chat agrees that they thought Thor was a better movie than Iron Man. So that was Thor. If we get to watch another movie in the coming week, next up is definitely Captain America, which is the one that I'm the most excited about. So hopefully that'll be even better than Thor and all of the Iron Man movies also.
So
we'll see.
Josh, I have a tip for you. If you enjoyed Thor, then you have to go watch Conan O'Brien's parody trailer for Thor. If you have not seen that, it is gold, so you must watch it.
All right, I'll watch that after the show tonight. Cool. All right, and then I also figured, whenever we talk about what's going on in our entertainment centers, we talk about what we're watching, but we talk about gaming on this show, so I figured I might as well talk about what I'm playing, and I'm not really going to spend much time, but I started playing Rayman Legends on the Xbox One, mostly because it's free. If you've got Xbox Live Gold, it's one of the current games with gold promotions, and it's a really fun little 2D platformer, and it's a game that I probably could play with my daughter if she wants to try it out. She's watched me play, so that's at least a good thing, that it's a game that I can play when my daughter is around and not have to be shielding her from the TV and the sounds like if I were playing Call of Duty or something like that. So that's been nice, and hey, it's free. The only other thing going on with me technologically, I guess, this isn't really in my entertainment center, but we talk about Windows Phone also, and I've finally decided and done even more than just decided. I've actually taken action and thrown my Nokia Lumia 1020 up on eBay. It is going to be sold, but I'm not leaving Windows Phone. I'm not Vivo. I'm not leaving the platform. My plan is to then take that money. I'm selling the 1020. I'm selling my camera grip. And then I'm going to buy a used 1520. So I'm really excited about that. I'm a little bit nervous about living day to day with a phone that's as gigantic as the 1520, but there really isn't anything else that's as good as the 1520 that works on AT&T. So that's now, what I'm going with.
My guess is that you will absolutely get used to it, and I guess that's the hope. What I always say is that the phones that large, like the 1520 and the Galaxy Note series, and the 6 Plus, it's a multifunction device. You can use it as a smartphone, and you can play ping pong with it. It's large enough. So that's always, it's nice to have extra features.
I will always have a ping pong paddle with me. That's,
yes.
I didn't think about that benefit.
Yeah, don't get caught flat-footed.
Right. You never know when a ping pong match is going to strike up. Good tip there. All right. Well, that's going to do it for what's going on in my entertainment center and for the show. So if you'd like to get a hold of us and let us know what you think about the week's news, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard, even though he's not here, we'll give out his Twitter handle. It's at Richard Gunther. The website is at Digi Media Zone, D-I-G-I Media Zone. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're also on Google Plus. If you want to call and leave us a message, you can do that by calling 877-856-4933, or you can just email us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got some other podcasts for you to enjoy, including one that this other guy on the show does called The End User, covering the latest tech news from the end user perspective, and Richard's other show, Home On, covering home automation and control news. And this week, he just released an episode where he sat down with the head of marketing from Logitech, talking about all of the moves that Logitech is moving into the home automation space with their Harmony remotes. Really interesting show this week, and nice to actually get some clarity on what Logitech is doing in this space straight from the horse's mouth. So great episode if you're into home automation. If you like any of our shows, please leave us some ratings or reviews over on iTunes or Zune, or maybe you're listening on Stitcher Radio or TuneIn Radio. We're at all of those places. And if you think that email and voicemail and Twitter, it's just not real time enough for you, then you can come and listen to the show live, because we have the chat room while we're recording the show. It's typically Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's not always. We started a little bit later tonight. So your best bet is to follow us on Twitter to find out when we're going to be live. But follow that and then come and listen and join in. Chris, I want to thank you for joining me this week for the first time in, what did we say, like 40 episodes or something like that?
Been a long time, yeah. Yeah, so I had a good time. So thanks for having me on. I'm glad to fill in. I really had a good time tonight. So one note, the end user, we're not going to have a podcast this week, so we're going to skip a week. But normally we're live on Wednesday nights, and sometimes on very special weeks, we have a week where there's an entertainment 2.0, the end user battle, and we go head to head and only one podcast leaves.
Well, we don't normally have them at exactly the same time. We try to start before you and hopefully finish before you start. It's back to back. It's not a battle. We're not fighting. So, Chris, if people want to find you online other than the end user, how can they find you online?
So the best place is definitely Twitter. I'm at Chris Hale Barnes. My middle name is H-A-L-E, named after Nathan Hale. So that's a history lesson for someone out there. So look that up. And yeah, find me on Twitter.
All right, cool. Thank you again for joining us. That's going to do it for episode 320. I'm Josh Pollard. Our guest this week was Chris Barnes. And I'll be back next week with Richard for episode 321. Until then, adios.